It's time to hear what's good, what's bad, and what's ugly at the cinemas and on DVD. Get ready for...
Wait for it!
Film Sociology with WFYI's film guru...
Kaiser Soze!
No, that's Matthew Soze.
It's such a fine line between stupid and clever. Yes.
Let's find out how thin the line is. Here's your host, Matthew Soze.
Hello there, film lovers. Welcome to Film Sociology, a film talk show here on WFYI HD2 The Point and WFYI.org. If you have a question or a comment, you can email me at msocey, that's M-S-O-C-E-Y, at WFYI.org. Also on Facebook, also on Twitter, at Matthew Soce. We also, the show is available as a podcast. It's also available on iTunes, and we have a blog, which is always getting better, and you can check out at...
Yes, filmsociology.tumblr.com, now updated with things that the show has officially decreed over time, such as Pam Grier is timeless and Christoph Waltz is awesome. Those are the two official things.
Did you update
so far.
It so it would say two-time Academy Award-winning actor Christoph Waltz?
No, but I can now.
I think we should. Thank you, sir. That's Kobe Slagle.
Yep.
And, boy, it's been a few days since the Film Geeks Final Four tournament, NCAA tournament, known as the Academy Awards, which, was Sunday. And, okay, everybody's asking, how did I do? I got 12 out of 24 in the official, well, I was involved in a couple different pools. But none of those really matter so long as I beat Laura Jansen. I'm gonna sound like a Bears coach about that one. I don't care.
That's how, what we play for every year.
Just to beat the best woman at my wedding and get a soundtrack. So I won. Ha ha. Send me Inception. Okay. And it was fun at the Soce House. And I was on Twitter at Matthew Soce during the Academy Awards. So I want to thank everybody for chiming in during the Oscars. You know what, Kobe? As I learned. That's hard to do.
What?
You're trying to keep up with all of the snark mm-hmm. for 3.5 hours straight.
And, yeah, the more people you follow, the more snarkiness that you have to,
counter and
yep.
come up with and be clever mm-hmm. and things like
it's,
that.
So, it's people don't realize that's hard work.
It is hard work. It is grueling work here.
It's hard work being a hater.
I am okay, fine. I drink the haterade, as Fair Sweet Bianca has said. So I'll get to my my in-depth breakdown analysis in a little bit. But Mr. Slagle, you being of the producer and engineer of Film Sociology, did you and Fair Sweet Bianca watch the Academy Awards Sunday?
Yes.
Let me start. Did you have to watch the red carpet because she's a woman?
No, did not have. Actually, didn't watch hardly any of it at all, really.
None of the red carpet. So you actually watched the event itself.
Yeah.
That's really okay.
And voluntarily, like a couple years ago, went to a friend's birthday party, which happened to coincide on Oscar Sunday that year.
They're not planning well.
And but that was the first time that I'd ever, actually watched the whole thing all the way through.
I see.
Yeah.
I haven't missed the Academy Awards since 1975.
Haven't missed?
Have not missed.
There are no commercials for people that haven't missed the Academy. Like
there's
there's
old
commercials
guys at the Super Bowl?
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm not
people,
that guy.
Yeah.
No, it's all right. Now, at the Soce House, because I have an 11-year-old daughter, she wanted to watch we wound up watching the first half, or last half hour, I should say, of the red carpet before the awards itself. So overall, a 4-hour evening.
Who did she think looked good?
I don't know, but we did mock.
Actually, let's go this way. What did she think was ugly?
She
and
did,
hideous?
You know, she
and she shouldn't have worn that.
Believe it or not, she does not really carry the male Soce hater gene. There's a reason why she looks and thinks like her mother. But we did announce, I was wearing my blue jeans from Goodwill that were cut at the ends because the waist is good, but the leg length was not. Because we're hipsters, we shop at Goodwill. And the Cynthia Lane t-shirt and Emma informed me of the peace sign shirt that she and Mom bought in Chicago, and she couldn't remember where the pants came from because Mom bought them. Mm. So we did do our red carpet moment at home.
Okay.
Emma got, I think, 3 or 4 right. Not bad for first year out, of course.
This is first year out?
First year of actually submitting a ballot.
Okay.
And, you know, like Pretty Football Helmet, she was picking movies that she knew of and people she was aware of. She voted for Jennifer Lawrence because of Hunger Games. She had not seen Silver Linings Playbook. Mm-hmm. But that's what happens when you're 11, and that's okay. So now, overall, was I happy? Was I unhappy with the Academy Awards? I was fine. I'm happy Argo won. I think Argo was a better picture than Lincoln. I was talking with Scott Hoke, and I thought Lincoln would get Best Picture because it's a very important historical picture.
Yeah,
movie.
I was afraid it would get that because of
that.
Oh, it's an American history thing, and how dare it not win? And it has to win, and this, that, and the other thing.
Although I remember getting those calls because on No Limits, we had a caller. Not Chew, but was surprised that Ed Johnson and I did not put Lincoln in our top 10. I'm like, you know what? Clip that ending. Might have had a shot, so to speak. But yeah, really happy for Christoph Waltz.
Yes.
Daniel Day-Lewis, I mean, 3 times the guy's just an acting juggernaut. Yeah, we love Waltz. And by the way, if you still need to see him host Saturday Night Live and his skit, Jesus Uncrossed, it's just offensive and bad and funny. Yeah, kudos to Jennifer Lawrence. Kudos to Anne Hathaway. For me, the biggest surprise, besides the fact that Brave won Best Animated Feature over Wreck-It Ralph.
Oh, yeah.
No, that's not correct. But how much love Life of Pi received. And I'm hoping more people will check that out. And the fact that now...
They got director...
Ang Lee is now a 2-time Best Director winner. Best Cinematography... As well as...
did it get visual effects?
Best original score, and hold on, I'm almost there. And best visual effects.
Yes.
That's correct. So kind of upsetting much bigger pictures like The Hobbit and The Avengers.
Yes.
So, and yes, Tarantino now has 2 Oscars because of Django Unchained, and I know that's going to upset a lot of people, and that's really okay. And Skyfall got some love.
Skyfall!
So, very cool, and yes, it was, you know, hearing 75-year-old Shirley Bassey, they wheeled her out. And
that was very cool.
And not quite 75-year-old Barbara Streisand. No, she's in her 60s, I'm sure. So anyway, overall, it was a fun time. Now, ladies and gentlemen, we were talking earlier about the Twitter and online hate. I don't really get upset over the host of any kind, no matter who it is. And I'll tell you why. Scott Hoke and I debated this on Morning Edition earlier in the week. It's interesting that half of the viewing audience is shocked, I say, when a host is brought on to do the Academy Awards and they do the comedy that they are known for. Like, what did you expect? When Jon Stewart's on, he's going to do political humor. When David Letterman was hosting, you got Letterman-esque humor. If you're Billy Crystal, you do the Catskills and the Poconos. And, you know, you get Whoopi Goldberg jokes and you get Ellen DeGeneres jokes. They bring what they bring to them. So Seth MacFarlane giving you musical numbers, jokes that go on a little too long, wrung out for every laugh for what it's worth, that's what you're going to get. Was the 20-minute intro too long? Yes. Was the dress up as a nun to impress Sally Field long and necessary? Probably not. Was the singing with Kristen Chenoweth at the end needed? Probably not. But that's what he was brought to do. And I think people are also kind of putting him in the same category as Ricky Gervais because he dares to make fun of the Hollywood elite. That's why you brought him.
Yeah.
Has anybody not seen Family Guy or American Dad or any of the other shows he's rolling around in money with?
Yeah.
That's what he does.
I liked it.
So, do you agree with me that I thought it was, you know, I thought some of this stuff was too long?
Yeah, I mean, the intro, a little bit long, yeah.
I think it was 20 minutes before we had our first envelope.
Yeah, but I liked it because because of who it was. It was him, and he was doing his thing. He wasn't doing, you know, he didn't come out there... He didn't change for the moment.
No, and he shouldn't.
He stayed true to what he did.
He didn't have Bruce Valanche write his material.
Yes.
He wrote his own.
And, yeah, actually, the whole night got off to a really good start. I loved the intro that Seth did, then right off the bat, Christoph Waltz wins, and then Paper Man wins for Best Short.
Yeah, Paper Man was very cool, very, very happy. There was one animated thing they got correctly, and Searching for Sugar Man.
Oh, yes.
Got Best. So hopefully, the thing about the Oscars is, of course, I always remember Roger Ebert saying, if you get nominated, you are guaranteed one picture after that. If you win, you're guaranteed three. The other part is, and let's not forget, the Academy Awards is also a business. There's a lot of films that will benefit financially because of winning these awards. There's a reason why Argo was re-released in theaters last weekend and put out on DVD and Blu-ray last week. You know, all the ballots had already been accumulated, and the guys from Price and Waterhouse were there with their... They got a red carpet moment, which was fascinating. So the ballots were already in. But yeah, because people will now go and see it and find out if it's worthy of winning the award or what all the hype is about.
Yeah.
And I hope more people check out Searching for Sugar Man and Life of Pi because of that. So very, very cool about that. But yeah, folks, lighten up. And I think the other people were complaining about how long the Academy Awards were. 3.5 hours. I remember 4-hour stretches in the 80s.
Are these the same people that complain? Well, are the people complaining the same people that watch 4 hours of football every Sunday?
Well, exactly. I think also people are forgetting that a lot of folks are also watching the red carpet, which I don't need. I don't need the red carpet, just like I don't need 9 hours of pregame for the Super Bowl. You know, because I have a daughter at home who's interested in fashion and interested a little bit in show business, she wanted to see what people were wearing and telling me to be quiet when I thought that that person looked great. I only got a half hour out of that, but you know, I don't need the red carpet, and I'm sure some people do.
I don't care who you're wearing or where the diamonds are from, or
diamonds are forever.
Diamonds are forever.
Shirley Bassey sang that too. Mm-hmm. So, anyway, it was fine. So kudos to that. Now, of course, from a film critic standpoint, we're now just stuck in cinema void.
But next week, though, there potentially some light at the end of the tunnel with Oz.
Oh, the Sam Raimi Oz movie with James mm-hmm. Franco,
yeah.
who didn't host.
Yes.
Also surprised that people were shocked that Anne Hathaway and James Franco did quirky, odd things. Shocking. So hopefully you can go check out some of these. Now, we bring up the Oscars, and of course, always the night before the Academy Awards are the Razzies. And Kobe, you have the list in front of you. I wish Fair Sweet Bianca were here to read the list of Razzie winners, because I think there's a recurring theme.
Yes, there is.
With the Razzies, and what would that be?
Let's just start at the top. Worst Picture, Twilight Saga Breaking Dawn, Part 2. Worst Director, Bill Condon, Twilight Saga Breaking Dawn, Part 2. Worst Actress, Kristen Stewart, Twilight Saga Breaking Dawn, Part 2. And Snow White and the Huntsman.
Yeah, they tend to lump more than one picture together if you've had several films in one year.
Adam Sandler, Worst Actor for That's My Boy. Worst Supporting Actress, Rihanna for Battleship.
Dumb movie.
Boom.
Boy, that's a dumb movie.
Worst Supporting Actress. Oh, wait, we already got that.
Yeah, you got it.
Worst Supporting Actor, sorry. Taylor Lautner, Twilight Saga.
Did he wear his Clemente jersey when he picked up the award?
Probably. I wouldn't put it past him. Worst Screen Ensemble, The Twilight Saga Breaking Dawn Part 2. Worst Screenplay, That's My Boy. Worst Remake, Ripoff, or Sequel.
Twilight. Wow.
Worst screen couple, Mackenzie Foy and Taylor Lautner.
Well, that's an upset, because isn't Miss Stewart and either one of those guys nominated as well?
Actually, yeah, Pattinson and Stewart also in that category.
Well, look at that. Wow. So there's a surprise.
Also that's in that category, Tyler Perry and his drag.
Yes.
And Madea's witness protection.
I think that's this year's Life of Pi at the Razzies, the fact that Kristen Stewart did not win Worst Couple. Woo!
So... there you have it.
Well, I think, Kobe, I'm going to ask...
And our friend Richard Probst is a Razzie voter.
Yes, he is. Now, you talk about Haterade.
Yep.
I may have a cup of Haterade. He's got a 50-gallon pump drum.
He distills it.
With his foot. and he knows what I mean. Paul McCartney something. So, Kobe, I think for next week's show, I would like to get a statement from the former Twilight correspondent.
Oh, an official statement?
I think an official statement. Not since the reading of her review of Twilight am I anticipating more. Probably the last piece of Twilight news is its Titanic-esque sweep of the Razzie Awards.
Well, it's set to come out on DVD and Blu-ray here next week.
No, really?
I think so.
We'll have to check.
Yeah.
We'll have to check. So, all right. So, anyway, hopefully next week we will get a comment, a response to the Razzie Awards sweep
by Twilight.
She's been called out. Now we're waiting for a response.
Yeah, that's what we're doing. All right, we're going to take a short break, and we'll talk about what is new on DVD and Blu-ray, and we'll talk. We'll go into the archives and possibly dead people we like. You're listening to Film Sociology, a film talk show here on WFYI HD2 The Point and WFYI.org.
Are either one of these any good?
I don't watch movies.
Well, have you heard anything about either one of them?
I find it's best to stay out of other people's affairs. You know who I can do without? I can do without the people in the video store.
Which ones?
All of them.
What would you get for a 6-year-old boy who chronically wets his bed?
So do you have any new movies in?
Do you have that one with that guy who was in that movie that was out last year?
They never rent quality flicks. They always pick the most intellectually devoid movie on the racks.
Ooh, Navy SEALs!
It's like in order to join, they have to have an IQ less than their shoe size.
Just go open the video store.
Yeah, open the video store!
Blockbuster Video! Wow, what a difference!
Welcome back to Film Sociology, a film talk show here on WFYI HD2 The Point and WFYI.org. If you have a question or a comment, you can email me at msocey, that's M-S-O-C-E-Y, at WFYI.org. Also on Facebook, also on Twitter, at Matthew Socey. Hanging out with Kobe Slagle, we're in the post-Oscar lull now, and post-Razzie lull, apparently. So, still waiting to hear from, get a statement from the Twilight office. Yeah, the Twilight Office of Film Sociology Productions. It's a massive building. Huge. She has to set up
appointments. We take up a whole block.
Yeah, she has to set up appointments to go see Tracy Mitchell. It's just tremendous. So, all right, we're going to – not a whole lot on DVD and Blu-ray this week. Maybe the movie industry is trying to tell us to go see the movies that won Academy Awards. However, the big title opening this week on DVD and Blu-ray, and it was nominated for a few awards, it didn't get any, but that's okay, is The Master from Paul Thomas Anderson. Of course, acting awards for nominations, I should say, for Joaquin Phoenix, Philip Seymour Hoffman, and Amy Adams. And Phoenix plays a World War II veteran who's not really adjusting to civilian life all that well until he comes across a very charismatic, we can't say cult, leader, played by Philip Seymour Hoffman, and his wife, played by Amy Adams. Just a reminder, Paul Thomas Anderson, who, of course, gave us Boogie Nights and Magnolia and There Will Be Blood, this is so not about Scientology. Nope. Not at all. Not at all. I think he's trying to say this is any religious or social organization. But overall, excellent acting across the board. I think maybe if it weren't for Daniel Day-Lewis, Joaquin Phoenix would have had a chance and be forgiven for his rap career posing as performance art documentary with Casey Affleck. But we expect an excellent performance from him as well as Adams and Hoffman. So, but it does show the power of certain religious organizations and how much of a pull they have, and social organizations as well. The ending, it's kind of a puzzle piece, and some folks got it and some folks didn't. I didn't entirely get it, so maybe I need to watch it a second time. But again, you can't question the performances, and it's a fascinating looking film. I know our buddy Craig Mintz over at IMAX got a 70mm print of it, and was just visually spectacular. So that is out there. Also out on DVD and Blu-ray this week, new titles. You have the Gerard Butler surfing drama called Chasing Mavericks. And a film Kobe will not see, Silent Hill Revelation.
Nope.
You haven't seen any of the Silent Hills, have you?
Nope.
Not at all?
Mm-mm.
Never played the video game?
Mm-mm.
No people who've played the video game?
No, I don't. I remember playing Resident Evil 2 when it was on, I think, original PlayStation, like in the late 90s, and that's about as most zombie things as I've ever gotten.
Late 90s was a different era than the early to mid-late
90s.
Early
90s, yeah.
Totally different era.
Totally.
Okay, so, and you haven't seen any of the Resident Evil movies. You're not missing a thing.
Good.
Okay.
Didn't think I was, but.
No, not at all. So, And there's only a couple of old titles of note, for me at least, on Blu-ray. One is A New Life, and this is a story where Alan Alda, and this is done in the late 80s, it starred Alan Alda and Anne Margaret as a couple who break up, and they wind up going their separate ways with younger partners. And this is this film is a note of two things. One, this is a film that had Alan Alda as an actor for this character get a perm. People are used to the kind of Alan Alda hair that we grew up watching on MASH and the films that he did in the 80s. So it was kind of a big deal, at least in Hollywood's eyes, in the late 80s, that he grew a beard and got a perm for this. And two, it's a movie where you have trouble with a marriage with Anne Margaret. Therefore, you're an idiot. The other title that's even a bigger and better note, making its Blu-ray debut, the Coen Brothers film The Hudsucker Proxy. Tim Robbins, Jennifer Jason Leigh, Paul Newman, Charles Durning. Fun story about a small town guy, Muncie. Yes, Muncie, Indiana, working at a big corporate business and being set up to be a stooge for a big scandal, all organized by Paul Newman. Jennifer Jason Leigh does a really good Katharine Hepburn impression from the 1940s as a reporter trying to get more information on Robin's character. And, of course, Robin's character eventually develops the hula hoop, and it's a huge success. But there is a link with Muncie, Indiana, and if you know the song that is sung there, you're probably singing that song in your head. Hopefully not out loud right now. So anyway, those are out there. And so now...
Wait a minute.
What?
Also.
Oh, you have alsos.
I have alsos.
You have alsos. I'm sorry. Yes, Kobe Slagle, the IU graduate here at Film Sociology, has some IU and other film news. Please share.
Yes, if you don't have any plans tonight, that's okay if you don't.
You owe me a check for that. You've taken my bit.
Tonight, IU Cinema, 7 o'clock.
Tonight, Friday.
Yep, tonight, okay. Friday. It is Friday. If you're not going to Winefest, that is.
Yes. You could listen to the show and still go to Winefest.
Yeah. But
anyway,
if you happen to be in Bloomington, IU Cinema, President's Choice,
Obama?
No, IU President's Choice.
Ah, big diff. Okay.
Yes. Yes. Unlisted concert film number one, as it is on the website, that because of rights issues, whatever, they can't say what it is, but it's a Led Zeppelin concert film.
The Song Remains the Same?
We will say that. No, it's not The Song Remains the Same.
Really? Well, that's a trip.
It's from 2007.
Oh, okay.
Tomorrow, 3 o'clock, The Bad and the Beautiful from 1952.
Kirk Douglas.
Mm-hmm. And at 7 o'clock, An American in Paris.
Gene Kelly. Now, has Ferris Wheat Bianca made you watch that?
She went and saw that at the Palladium when they were showing movies there.
Which heard about here on Film Sociology. Mm-hmm. And some people would say better than Singing in the Rain.
She did not.
Okay. Boy, we won't get a statement from her about that. although I wouldn't be surprised, now that I've called her out, that she would.
But Singing in the Rain is the stuff.
Most definitely the stuff. Mm-hmm. Especially Donald O'Connor.
And then Sunday evening, 6:30, 2013 Double Exposure. 7 o'clock, Only God Could Hear Me, a documentary from 2011. And Tuesday, March 5th.
Yes.
Dial M for Murder 3D.
Ooh, that's right. Yes, of course, Alfred Hitchcock did. I think he was pressured into making, jumping onto the 3D bandwagon in the 1950s with Grace Kelly and Ray Milland. Oh, whether it's 2D or 3D, good solid popcorn thriller, not a pop boiler, Kobe, from Alfred Hitchcock. Definitely worth checking out. That's good.
And also tonight at the IMA, the Asian Art Society film series, My Beautiful Laundrette.
Ah, very good. Featuring 3-time Academy Award winner Daniel Day-Lewis as a I'm going to say punk, and I'm sure the punks. No, I'm going to say I'm sure the real punks in the audience will send me emails correcting me. But it's he having a relationship with a Pakistani, if I remember, a gentleman while working at the Laundrette. And also the note of this was a really good year for Daniel Day-Lewis because he had already had small roles in films like Gandhi before this. And in one year, Daniel Day-Lewis appeared as a gay punk in My Beautiful Laundrette and then as the fop fiancé of Helena Bonham Carter in A Room with a View, which I'm surprised Fair Sweet Bianca has not made you watch yet because it's Merchant Ivory. You will. You guys have, you know what? You two, you have all the time in the world. So anyway, but that's a, that was a great introduction. That was like, who is this guy? And of course, 3 years later would be Oscar number one for My Left Foot. So excellent, excellent choices. Yes, definitely check out the Asian cinema series at the IMA. Now we are going to move on. I'm going to steal Chris Lloyd's line since you stole my line of we're going to get on to dead people we like because we don't have time for dead people we don't like.
Nope.
And I'm, is this a stretch? Maybe, but I hope I'm saying it right. Cleotha Staples, who was one of the founding members of the Staple Singers, and you'll hear a little bit of her music on the Blues House Party tomorrow night. But she died last week at the age of 78. I mention this only because the Staple Singers, of course, were part of one of the greatest concert documentaries ever made, Wattstax. So go check that out if you have not. And if you don't own any Staple Singers in your collection, you really should, because that's a fine combination of what I call Saturday night and Sunday morning music for you sinners out there. You're not making eye contact with me, Kobe. I know who you are.
I'm laughing because that is a fine example.
It is a fine example. So, and also, Matt Mattox, M-A-T-T-O-X, dancer for the movies, is according to the New York Times, died at the age of 91. Known at, now he on Broadway did plays like, was musicals like Once Upon a Mattress and the 1957 revival of Brigadoon, but got his appearance starring in movies like Yolanda and the Thief in 1945, Till the Clouds Roll By in 1946, was in Guys and Dolls in 1955, and Song of Norway, which I heard was a god-awful musical with Florence Henderson, in 1970. I don't think that's available on DVD or Blu-ray. I am looking for it. It's also a film that was mentioned in the Golden Turkey Awards. It was a nominee for Worst Musical, but it lost out to At Long Last Love.
I wonder if musical correspondent Bianca Dreyer has seen that.
Song of Norway?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know.
I was
like, if I haven't, she
I
probably
don't.
Has not.
Yeah, probably.
But he was also one of the Seven Brothers Looking for Seven Brides from the musical Seven Brides for Seven Brothers, 1954, directed by Stanley Donen, choreographed by Michael Kidd. So have you seen that?
Mm-mm.
Yes. So back when taking a woman and throwing her over your shoulder was okay, because it was the 50s in America, ladies and gentlemen. Boy, howdy. So thank you, Matt Mattox, and your dancing moves, although your legs not nearly as long as Tommy Toon's. All right, ladies and gentlemen, we now are going to, we're going to go into the archives. This is where a studio like Warner Brothers or MGM or Sony give you movies that you can buy online, you cannot get in stores, or as Kobe likes to put it...
Yeah, I'll burn it for like $5 and a case of Mountain Dew.
Oh, you've upped the price now.
Maybe that...
College
that'll be,
economics?
That'll be it.
Used to be... Was it college that we learned that you could do trade with more than just money? Oh, do your laundry.
Yeah.
Case of Mountain Dew. Case of... whatever. Yeah.
Yeah.
Or, you know, if you drop me off, I'll get you his barbecue from Zeb's.
I'll give you this half-eaten bag of taco-flavored Doritos.
Taco-seasoning-flavored Doritos. Anyway, enough snack food. We usually say that for the beginning of the show. But we're going to go into the archives with not one, but two comedies from the late 70s and early, I can remember 79 or 80, and 1984. So the 70s and 80s, Kobe.
Different time.
Different time.
Mm-hmm.
But these are two comedies directed by Sidney Lumet. And I think when you say Sidney Lumet, you think of great films like Dog Day Afternoon, The Verdict, 12 Angry Men, Serpico, even his last film, Before the Devil Knows You're Dead, The Wiz. Yes, he directed a musical. We'll have to bring in Fair Sweet Bianca to talk about musicals done by directors that really had no business making musicals. But anyway, that's another show. But he directed two comedies in the at that time, and the first one was from 19. And these are both available on Warner Brothers and MGM. The first one is called Just Tell Me What You Want, and it stars Alan King. Therefore, it's obviously from the late 70s, who is a business mogul who's got his hands in everything. He's not Ted Turner, and his teeth aren't big enough. And he apparently likes black and white cinema compared to Turner. But he's a very wealthy businessman, a mogul, who's got many different mistresses. And his top mistress at this time is played by Ally McGraw. This was, of course, back when Ally McGraw was still doing movies in the 1970s, post-Love Story. And she wants to get into the business. She wants to get in the show business. But she wants to do it on her own terms and not under the clutches of her lover, who has enough pull to make anybody's life miserable. And what's interesting about the film is it's from the same screenwriter that worked with Lumet on Prince of the City, which is a great cop drama, as well as wrote the screenplay for Cabaret. And if you watch the trailer for Just Tell Me What You Want, which is on the DVD, and you could probably check it out on YouTube, it's famous for a fight scene between Ally McGraw and Alan King in a New York department store. The problem is the rest of the film is not like that. They put most of the fight in the trailer, so it looks like it's going to be a wacky, knockdown, drag-out romantic comedy.
Misleading trailer for a movie?
I know, it's baffling. And by the way, in other news, the sun rises and sets. And Zero Dark Thirty is a documentary. No, kidding. So it's more about the class system in New York society. It's about show business. Peter Weller is one of his first film roles as a screenwriter who winds up having an affair and winds up getting married to Ally McGraw's character. And this is actually the liveliest I've ever seen Ally McGraw. I know certain aspects of film sociology world, like Bianca, enjoy Love Story, even though it's a sappy, terrible movie. Because love means never having to say die, Ally McGraw, right? But she actually has a pulse in this one and is lively. But other than the fight scene, it is a low-key romantic comedy. So, therefore, Matthew McConaughey and Kate Hudson could never star in a remake of this. The other film that Lumet directed, and this is from 1984, is called Garbo Talks. And it stars Anne Bancroft as a very feisty New York woman who finds out she is dying, and the only thing she wants to do is meet New York recluse actress Greta Garbo, and she sends her only son, played by Ron Silver, out on the mission to find Garbo. And he is married to Carrie Fisher, and of course their marriage isn't doing all that well. His business career is not doing all that well, and now he's under the thumb of his kind of domineering mother to go find Greta Garbo in New York City in the early or the mid 80s, because the mid 80s were different than the early 80s. Wholly different time, totally different time. And again, this is another film where it could have been a wacky, obnoxious comedy. You could see Jerry Lewis starring in this in 1960, or even Eddie Murphy starring as both the son and the daughter, and the mother.
In 1994.
Or Tyler Perry now. But it's again, low-key by comparison. Because, you know, when you're going after a celebrity, I guess that's called stalking,
mm-hmm.
or very focused affection, as I like to call it. But, because remember, if there's a restraining order, they're thinking about you. However... At the end of the film, and I don't want to give away too much, but there is if anything else, I don't know if it's on YouTube, but you can check it out, or you can, you know, burn a disc for whatever. But there is an 8-minute single take of Anne Bancroft, and Anne Bancroft was just a fantastic actress, and of course, when films like The Miracle Worker and The Graduate, those are great examples. And of course, she gets a lifetime pass, even though she's dead, for being married to Mel Brooks, because that's just cool. But it is a fantastic scene with Anne Bancroft. And there's also a last a career-changing moment, or I should say a plot-changing moment with Ron Silver. Young Ron Silver, non-bearded Ron Silver at this time. So anyway, two low-key comedies from Sidney Lumet. Neither one of them did financially well at the box office, and he just went back to doing dramas after each one of these films. So anyway, those are worth checking out if you go into the archives. So, ladies and gentlemen, with the time we have left, and it is of course Wine Fest Friday.
Yep.
In the shameless plug department, I'm sorry, it's been so long since I've shamelessly plugged something. The Trip to Bountiful is happening at Scottish Rite Cathedral tonight at 7:30, and it's also happening tomorrow at 7:30 and next Friday and Saturday at 7:30 p.m. plus a 3 p.m. matinee. On Saturday, I should say, March 9th at Scottish Rite Cathedral, The Trip to Bountiful is written by Horton Foote and directed by yours truly. And I still got through that faster than Gina when it comes to plugging plays. Kobe knows exactly what
that
I'm talking
about. That was a disaster.
And we love you, Gina. I'll just save the shameless plugs for myself. That's okay. But anyway, and it's also It was originally, of course, a play that was done in the 1950s. It was made into an Academy Award-winning film in 1985. Geraldine Page won Best Actress for this. It's a beautiful, poignant drama, and it's directed by, of all people, me. But it's a widow living in Houston, Texas in 1953 with her ailing son, recovering son, his health is better, and domineering daughter-in-law. And all she wants to do is visit her childhood home of Bountiful, Texas one more time. So Horton Foote, for me, was an example of less is more when it comes to writing and acting. And I discovered his work when I was 13 years old with the Robert Duvall film Tender Mercies, and then became 98% of college men when I found out he did the screenplay for To Kill a Mockingbird. Kobe, that meant I was stoked.
Stoked.
But and of course,
he did
Trip to Bountiful and many other things. So anyway, it is a poignant family drama. It's believe it or not, the snarky guy directed a touching piece of theater, in my honest opinion. And you can check that out this weekend and next weekend at Scottish Rite Cathedral, 262-3100 for ticket information. And whether you like to play or not, it's a gorgeous space to see live theater at Scottish Rite Cathedral. And I think a lot of people assume you have to be a Mason to enter the building. And that's not entirely true. There is a cafeteria that you can have dinner and lunch at. There's also organized tours throughout the week. So you can go and visit this beautiful, and it seats 900. There's plenty of seats, folks. Come out and see the show. But anyway, that is this weekend and next weekend. Now, ladies and gentlemen, as an extra bonus, which is kind of redundant, here at Film Sociology, we are going to, as I call it, pull a fresh air. And we are going to share for you, ladies and gentlemen, one of our classic interviews from the, yes, and it's a huge room, the Film Sociology Archives.
Well, what's on your mind?
Well, first off, I guess I should... How should I address you?
Your Majesty.
My liege, I was thinking, but...
My name is... I'm half Syrian, half Italian, and it's hard to please both sides of the family. So my father's name is Frederick, and they called... My name is Frederick, but I decided to use an F because the Syrians call me Farid, and the Italians call me Federico. So with the F, I pleased everybody.
All right, so F. Murray.
That's fine. Murray is just dandy.
Murray, okay.
And how do I call you?
Matthew.
Okay, Matthew.
And so obviously you played a lot of Wasp, obviously, with your background.
I played a lot of Wasp. Yeah, I don't think I ever played a Wasp in my life.
How did you get hooked up with the Indianapolis Symphony Orchestra?
I've been doing this for years, all over the world.
This particular piece?
And I think that this particular piece, you know what we're doing, right? The Copland piece?
Lincoln's Portrait.
Yeah, it's just, it's very meaningful to me. And the first time I ever did it was here in town with the New York Philharmonic. And I was carried away. I really was very moved by that, by those words. And I had done some studying. I had played a Lincoln once, believe it or not, speaking of Wasps.
A Continental?
A Continental Lincoln? No. Hey, you know, that was a great-looking car.
Yes, it was.
A wonderful car at one time.
Back when cars were a piece of art.
Well, yeah, you're talking to a car fiend. I agree with you. When you could, we could spot cars by the sound of their mufflers. They were that individual. I don't know if you know that.
I grew up in an automotive town up in Michigan, so yeah, I remember those days.
Where were you, around Flint?
Yes, I grew up in Flint. Got out with all my fingers.
Yeah, well, my people were steel workers in Pittsburgh.
Yes.
We made the steel. I don't know. You have your own steel mills in Indiana. I know that.
Well, not really. Gary's a wasteland nowadays.
Well, have you been to Flint lately?
Yes.
I mean, it's really too bad. It's a depressing thing. A friend of mine who lives there, when I did a concert in Detroit, it was one of these concerts. Only this was an interesting concept. A concert. It was... I'm trying to think. It was, you know Stravinsky's Story of a Soldier.
Yes.
Rather, his music for it.
Right.
Well, Vonnegut has written an adaptation. He said that the original story has nothing to do with reality. He said the music does, the discordant, the wonderful, driving, strange, and absolutely brilliantly original music. I worship Stravinsky. This is a tough piece of literature and writing. He hated war, Vonnegut did.
Mm-hmm.
And it's extraordinary. I don't know why it's not done more often instead of the original. But I was doing it in Michigan, and a friend of mine took me out for a ride out by the lake to have a nice fish dinner. And I saw all those beautiful mansions, all for sale.
Yeah. Now, how often do you get to do pieces like this with symphonies?
Well, it's whenever I get calls, and if I'm not making a flick, or if I'm not doing a play, I jump at the chance, because I don't know how to explain it. If you have a chance to be on the stage with an orchestra, you have to do it. You have to arrange it with, if you have any pull anywhere, just to be on the stage with them while they're working out.
Now, is this a piece where it's in between the songs, or they're playing under you as you're reading?
It's going to be between and during.
Ooh.
It's just thrilling.
That's got to be a rush.
Oh, I can't begin to tell you. And I've worked with some of the greatest in the world. And it's thrilling. I mean, really thrilling. It's like a different kind of a thrill, because there's no, it's not an intellectual activity. It's far beyond that. It's really deeply, it's visceral, but at the same time, it's transporting. It's transcending. Great.
Well, it's interesting, because when you do a film, unless the director pumps music onto the set during a shot, I mean, that's one thing. But to be able to have, I mean, the soundtrack is behind you.
Yeah, the only problem with it, I mean, the danger, not the problem, is that if you miss your cue, you're in trouble, because the orchestra doesn't try to vamp and catch up. It's hard to do with 90 pieces,
it's,
you know.
It's not a jazz combo.
It's great. It's also a completion of sorts in terms of an actor, because there are things that an actor in a classical works, for example, any Shakespeare, any musical piece of work, Molière, for example, or even some of the beautiful music that's in Tennessee Williams, you're never going to be able to achieve what music achieves. You try to,
mm-hmm.
Vocally and also spiritually, but you can't accomplish what Mozart does. It's just a different thing. But the idea that you can combine them, it's a kind of a gift, I must tell you. It's like a little present. And the whole thing is, I'm sure, because I did that movie so many years ago, Amadeus.
25.
I mean, can you imagine? That thing is still alive. People still love it.
Yes, I can, actually. I was 14 when that film came out. I remember being the youngest one in the theater by about 30 years. And think, not only did this film introduce me to and open my mind to classical music, but I went, wow, who is this guy? You know, the guy from Animal House is great, but who's him? Who is he? And that was, for a lot of people, that was the world introduction to F. Murray Abraham.
Yeah, it was a treat. It was a gift. The problem is, of course, it's not being able to do another one like it, you know?
No, Amadeus 2, the final years.
Well, my son said that there should be a sequel where Amadeus is where Mozart's son grows up and wants revenge. He wants to call it Amadambo. Anyway,
don't give Michael Bay any ideas. Now, when you filmed that, did you do the young Salieri first or the old one first?
The old one. I did all the old stuff first. We did it in 3 weeks.
Wow. How much time on the chair for makeup?
4 hours, 4.5 hours each morning.
Were you able to sleep?
Well, I was pretty intense. I don't know how to tell you. I'm a pretty intense actor anyhow, but I was completely dedicated to that, and I lived alone when I was in Prague to be away from the company. It was all completely focused. I think the biggest mistake I made, if you can call it a mistake, is expecting to, from that point, do that kind of work for the rest of my life in film. That's kind of naive.
Well, what was the silliest script you got after winning the Oscar?
Oh, gee, there were so many that I refused. I should have done them just for the money, if not anything else. But they were just silly. They made me out to be a villain. I don't think Salieri is a villain. Well, I think he's a real human being.
Well, Carl Malden said bad guys don't wake up thinking they're bad guys. They got a job to do.
Good old Carl Malden. I just saw One Eyed Jacks not long ago. He was
In that. Yeah, I just watched Baby Doll. Not a film to watch with your wife, but
that's another good performance. Was that Kazan?
Yes. It's funny you mentioned intensity. My daughter, she's 7, and she said you were intense in Muppets from Space.
Isn't that great?
She's like, you're talking to him? I went, yes, that's part of Daddy's job,
believe
it or not.
Oh, you're kidding.
No.
That's so flattering. Isn't that a great age?
Yeah, she's. It's funny. My wife is an actress, and any role that my wife plays, my daughter wants to play. So she refers to herself as Baby Gertrude and Baby Parthy. And last year, Lynn got to do Lear, and Emma said, "I'm Baby Goneril," and we went, "No, you're not. No, no, no. That's wrong." And on so many levels. Yeah. Don't give her any. I directed that, but she doesn't remember. Thank God.
You're an actor.
I try. My wife is equity. I'm independent. And if it's a choice between my wife's guaranteed equity money and or my vanity projects, I let the missus work.
Works the work. So. I mean, you can see that for some of the films I've done. I mean, after a while, you think, well, I'm not going to wait anymore for a good film. I've got to make the rent.
Well, even
after a while, you think, oh, God, do I have to do this? And you do.
But I think even films that are, maybe there's not high-profile roles, but when I see you in something like Insurrection and Surviving the Game, I'm like, well, he's going to be fine. He knows what he's doing.
Well, I love the idea of people asking me, like, well, why are you doing those movies? Well, that's kind of a dumb question. I mean, you do what you have to do. But if they ask me to do other films, I would do them. But it seems to me that my life is really revolves around the theater here in New York, and I do films when I have a break from the theater.
As opposed to the other way around.
Yeah, but it's a nice life. Mm-hmm. Just one of those. I love Shakespeare, and you can't live on Shakespeare, not in New York anyway. I don't think you can anywhere. I mean, I don't think they pay very well.
Mm-hmm. Now, was it after Amadeus that you wound up doing a lot more classical theater?
Yeah, I was doing it before, but afterwards it was amazing how it kind of guarantees your work life. It's hard to believe. I mean, I'm a good actor, but there are a lot of good actors around. You know that.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not selling myself short, but you know what I'm talking about. You got to have some luck in this business.
Sure.
And I've had some luck, but ever since I won the Academy Award, I've been working practically every day. It's just been wonderful stuff off-Broadway, experimental stuff with Richard Foreman and with, Tom O'Horgan and, gosh, I guess everybody in town. I've really had a great time. I'm going to continue having a great time.
Well, it seems like it's been, from an artist standpoint, to be able to do stage and screen and voiceover and narration, so you're not stuck in a rut. You're not stuck doing a soap or a sitcom for years and years and years.
Yeah, it's the best.
And one of the things that's always been was cool for me, especially after seeing Amadeus, was you were one of that guys. And when I saw your earlier work, I'm like, oh my! I was a caffeinated 15-year-old, so I'm like, oh, it's the Amadeus dude in Scarface and Serpico and the Sunshine Boys. It was one of those, I have to go back, and this is before the internet, I'm like, I have to go back and find out what else this guy has done to lead up to this.
Oh, you got to take a look at the Ritz.
Yes, I saw the Ritz at too young of an age. I should revisit it again now that I'm more semi-mature.
Well, it works better on the stage, I think, but it's not a bad picture. Reed is great.
Yes, and I especially liked your work in Mighty Aphrodite.
Oh, thanks, that was fun.
Yeah.
I'm sorry you couldn't have seen any of my stage work, though, because I...
Well, you're still doing some stage work, right? I just need to go east.
I've been doing Ethan Coen's plays. Those are pretty funny.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if you know anything about them.
What are some of the plays?
Well, he's written 6 plays, and I've been in 4 of them.
So you're one of the community players.
They're 6 one-acts, short pieces, and it seems like we've got a hookup, and it's great. Because they're funny and they're brief and they're... What did Chekhov call his one-act plays? Vaudevilles? That's kind of what these are.
Right. Now, did I see you just completed a picture of Barbarossa?
Yeah, it should be coming out next month.
This isn't a remake of the Gary Busey, Willie Nelson Western, right? This is completely different?
Gosh, I didn't know about that.
1982.
No, I don't know that picture. I know Gary. We worked together.
Mm-hmm.
In Surviving the Game.
Yes.
He's, we really had a good time, he and I. I mean, you've heard stories about him, and I...
Yeah, we've seen him on TV, yeah.
I didn't see any of that stuff. I mean, we had a great time. We became quite close.
I mean, the guy doesn't get an Academy Award nomination for nothing.
Well, that was a wonderful performance.
Yes. What is this Barbarossa about?
It's a historic character who actually tried to unify Italy, but under his command, Barbarossa came in from the north and tried to take it over. And it's this heroic story of a stand that these farmers made against this brilliant and great general, and these Italian farmers won. It's a historically in Italy, it was a great moment in their history.
And you shot it in Italy?
Yes, I do a lot of in Romania and Italy. I do a lot of work with the Italians. I've been doing it for ever since before Amadeus, actually. It's kind of my second home.
And you got the...
this picture I'm doing now is part Italian. It's Italian and Canadian financed.
This one is?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
The one I'm working on. Oh. And Barbarossa was strictly Italian.
Oh, I see.
And that was the fifth film I made with that director. And I'm going to make another one with him next year in Italy and Canada.
Mm-hmm.
That, too, is a co-production between Canada and Italy. Don't ask me the connection. There it is.
It's all right. I remember going, my family and I went to Stratford, and there was the Canadian Chinese restaurant. Whatever it takes. What's the picture you're working on now?
This is Giancarlo Giannini and I are old friends.
Ah.
He wrote this script for us, and he's starring in it and directing it as well, and we're shooting it just outside of Toronto. I'm in town for only about 4 days.
Mm-hmm.
I had a break and I came here to be with the family. But we're shooting up there, and then we'll when we finish up in Toronto, we'll go back to Rome and finish up there.
I should
be done with the picture on the end of October.
What's the title?
There's several titles. It feels a little like Woody Allen, the X Project.
Or untitled Woody Allen.
It's called Looking in Obituaries.
Yeah, it's going to be renamed in the States.
It's a good script. He did well. He wrote it, too.
Cool.
Yeah, he's a good guy. He's an inventor, too, by the way. Anyway.
What did he invent?
He is an electronic genius.
Really?
He does inventions for his own house, for his own sound system. And it's a remarkable man. He really is, aside from being a remarkable... ladies, man, they just fall over their feet when they see him. He's had a wonderful career. That his work with Lena was just sensational.
Mm-hmm. Cool.
Brett Mueller.
Yes.
I worked with her on a picture that she wrote.
What was the picture?
It was called, let's see, Enough About Romance, Now Let's Have Some Sausages. I mean, that's what she writes. But my co-star was... Sophia Loren.
Uh-huh.
And she played my wife, Lover, and I got to kiss her a lot of times.
Wow. You wish Kubrick was directing that day.
Yeah.
Take 130.
I don't know if I understand Kubrick's last flick. I was very disappointed, and I'm a real big fan.
Eyes Wide Shut? I was with it until the third Last Warning.
I just thought this is becoming predictable and dull. And he's never dull.
No.
I mean, his early stuff is still great. The Killing is still
love. The
great
Killing. It's so funny when people I show that to people, and I think they're used to the wide, huge, you know, almost bleak scope of something like The Shining in 2001. But The Killing is so good.
Yeah,
great heist film. Now you got me thinking of Sterling Hayden. I'm interviewing you.
Sterling Hayden. Wow. Continues to churn it out, doesn't he?
Always timeless work. It was funny,
have you seen my wife discovered it recently. The original upon which, speaking of Sterling Hayden, Airplane was based?
In
The Zone, or what was it?
I thought there were a couple.
Zero Hour.
Zero Hour, yes.
Have you seen it?
Not in a long time.
Oh, man, suddenly it's so funny.
So the Zuckers really were taking notes watching that.
No, they were lifting lines. The names are the same, too.
Oh, really?
At one point, Sterling Hayden say, it's a fine time to quit smoking. That was his line originally. And he's very serious. I mean, of course, they're all very serious. But it's great. I mean, you got to see it.
I'll look for it because it was funny. That was 1980 when the Airplane came out.
Oh, that couldn't have been that late. Really?
No, Airplane. Yeah.
Oh, Airplane, yeah.
Yeah, Airplane. But what I mean was you had all these serious actors like Leslie Nielsen and Lloyd Bridges and Robert Stack, and they were able to get a second, you know, second wind of their careers doing that stuff.
Well, they were willing to make fun of themselves. I thought that was very bold. And also that the credit goes to the director for making them feel they can get away with it, I think. That was they were wonderful. Bridges was sensational.
Yep.
But there was another line, the doctor on the plane. It was so legitimate. It was so funny.
I speak jive, no.
You have to find a doctor, but a doctor who didn't eat fish.
Oh, right.
It's a real, it's an honest to God, anyway.
Hey, let's not forget about your tongue work in Loaded Weapon 1.
That could have been better. Anyway, that's always fun.
A few months ago, I actually found on DVD and bought and watched again Name of the Rose.
Ah, yeah.
Very scary in that, you are.
6 months shooting. Sean was terrific.
And that was your first of two times working with Sean.
Yeah, he's a good guy. At least he was with me, anyway.
That's good.
Yeah, we got along very well. I usually have trouble with anyone, but, you know, you can't get along with everyone.
Mm-mm.
Some people are impossible, and we won't even go into who they are. Okay?
I would never ask that. That's not this type. This is not that type of program.
Yeah.
Just one film fan to another.
I
have to.
I just don't understand why we can't make better films. I really don't. I mean, we've got all these examples for the last, I don't know how many years now. There's no excuse for this crap. You know, there really isn't. There's just no respect for the word, I think, and that's what the problem is. Enough of this slice-of-life action crap. Let's get some art back into it. You know, those wonderful moments when you hear a theme or you see even a few frames of a picture and you go, I want to watch this again. I can't wait to see this movie again. That's the kind of movie that we can still make. I mean, the idea that you have to spend $200 million for a picture and you still can't make anything but trash, it's absurd.
Do you get a lot of offers from, say, independent directors?
Well, I get them. It's just that even that, they're not very good. I'd love to work for Del Toro, for example.
Ooh.
He and I got along very well on Mimic. Mm-hmm. And we made promises, and I'm from the border of Mexico, and we both speak Spanish, and I just haven't heard from him. So I'm sure when something comes up, he'll call me, because he's a sincere man. But I think he's terrific, and he started out as an independent. What was that wonderful story from Buñuel when he was approached? Do you remember that picture that Woody Allen made where they're standing in line and he talks, they're having an argument?
Annie Hall.
And Marshall McLuhan.
Marshall McLuhan is back behind the plant, If Life Were Only Like This.
Yes, well, he originally wanted Buñuel to do that.
Oh, really?
And it was going to be a different conversation, but it was going to... And he offered, you know, he offers everyone the same money, take it or leave it. But for Buñuel, who said, I can't do it, I'm busy, I'm working. And he said, well, I'll give you such and such amount of money. And he went up to $30,000, and which is outrageous for Woody Allen to offer.
Mm-hmm.
It was really a wealth of money for him to offer. And Buñuel still said, I really can't do it. And then he reflected and said, that was more money than my last film cost me to make. $30,000. Well, he was shooting in Mexico at the time. But
sure.
The point is, it doesn't have to be an expensive film to be a good one. You need a script. You need some good actors. And if you got a good script, you're going to get the actors.
Mm-hmm.
You get me just in a second. But anyhow, you do work for free. I mean, my theater work is practically, I have to underwrite it, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Theater doesn't pay.
Oh, we know about underwriting here. This interview,
you know very well what I'm talking about.
This interview was made possible by memberships like yours. Thank you.
Love. I got no complaints. But I really think that, as I said before, I've got a lot of friends in this business, long-lived friends who are just brilliant actors with all these chops, and they can't get arrested. I have to keep reminding them and myself what luck means in our lives. And I'm a very proud actor. I really love my profession, but I'm also full of humility. I'm constantly grateful for these breaks I've been getting. And I'm absolutely sincere when I tell you that.
Well, I looking back at even the film work, there doesn't seem to be anything that is embarrassing. And I've seen people with lots of money and lots of acclaim, and they do something that's just... it's just downright silly and not in a complimentary way. And I don't think it's ever happened with you.
Keep talking. Listen, you're very nice. Thank you so much for this.
Ladies and gentlemen, some words to live by.
Silent breed is people!
Zardoz has spoken.
Go see a good movie. You deserve it. Thanks, Kobe Slagle, for hanging out with me, and thank you for listening. Go see, like I said, go see a good movie. You deserve it.
Or come see us at Winefest.
Or go see us at Winefest or at Scottish Rite Cathedral for Trip to Bountiful.
I'll be at the raffle table.
And I'll be on stage. You're listening to Film Sociology, a film talk show here on WFYI HD2 The Point and WFYI.org.